VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And if he sounds a little distant, it's because he's not sitting next to me today. He's being a father and remoting in, which seems just terribly appropriate this particularly Father's Day-oriented weekend. So we've done this enough times that you all know it works out just fine, so you can treat him as if he's here, and the only thing we won't get is those stupid looks it gives me when I say something really idiotic on the show. But
yeah, I don't think it's the looks that are stupid. It's the maybe the comment.
Yeah, it depends what side of the fence you're on, I guess. But anyway, it is Father's Day weekend. It is live, as always, and I'd like to welcome everybody. Regulars, thanks for joining us again. We need you out there because otherwise it isn't worth getting up in the morning. But we also need you new people. So if you're new onto the show, either you just happen to find it or somebody told you, whatever, then stick around for the whole hour. And I think you will be happy you did. You're always going to take something away from it. Now, listening to the real estate show on the way out here to the studio this morning, Howard and Angela were talking to, they were talking about a subject that is something that comes up not frequently but periodically in our day jobs, and that is, should I, with these beautiful lower mortgage rates we have now, borrow against my house and invest the money and try to take the spread and put it in the bank? We will address that after the market wrap segment. So I don't know if Adam heard the announcement or not, but he can start thinking about it too. The answers will maybe surprise some people, maybe not. It's really kind of hard for me to say. But as a financial advisor of many years and a man of many opinions, I will not fail you. I will render an opinion. I promise that. So this was a week that I don't think it felt quite as good as when I put the numbers together this morning. It was actually somewhat pleasant. It just kind of a soft landing at the end that kept it from being a really good week. But let's say one thing for sure, the NASDAQ's on a tear. Isn't that right?
That it is. That it is. I agree with you. It did not feel like a great week, but it really was a great week.
It really was.
According to the numbers, a nice bounce back from last week. I think Thursday the markets ended up flat, more or less, and then Friday they were down. Well, two of the three were down, and it just didn't feel, it felt like a pretty disappointing end to, plus the market was up about 400 at one point,
yeah,
ended up down about 200.
The biggest problem I saw yesterday was the way it started, and started to get everybody all excited, and then it thud, but still good, no complaints.
I was not surprised to see it, though, because the news going into the weekend was not positive. There's a lot of coronavirus worrisome data out there that the news is, of course, making it sound like we are all now meeting our certain doom here. Anyway.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a wholly partisan issue. I really don't know how they've been so successful at turning a global pandemic into a Republican versus Democrat issue, but they have done it.
There's strength in numbers, Adam.
It's truly unbelievable. It's really not a partisan issue. There are issues in red states. There are issues in blue states. They're saying that Florida will be the next epicenter of the pandemic.
Right.
They said that. They've been saying that since February, by the way, and it hasn't happened yet. And California, which hasn't even opened back up yet, is seeing the exact same rise in cases that we are, which is, I don't understand why.
Oh, I
but
do.
We are definitely seeing it.
It's a correlation to the amount of testing we're doing. That's the only correlation you're going to find.
That is part of it, but there's also, I mean, the rise started on Memorial Day weekend, more or less. And it's been pretty steady since then. There is increased testing, but there's also increased human-to-human contact. So it was just inevitable. No one, I'm not surprised by the data. Only the news people are surprised by the data.
Right. And we are getting accomplished what they would not let us get accomplished in the first place, which is herd immunity.
That's correct. And as long as we do that in a safe, controlled manner where we don't overwhelm the emergency rooms, which was the intensive care units.
Right.
That was the initial concern with this thing, and that didn't happen with the way that we controlled it. So as long as we can continue to do that, in my opinion, that is the best strategy, because I am highly, highly doubtful that we come up with a vaccine in the next few years. I mean, HIV has been around for more than 30 years now, still no vaccine. I don't know why people are so convinced that we're going to have a vaccine by next year.
Nor am I. It's controllable. That's all that matters.
I don't see that happening.
Look at people like Magic Johnson and how many decades now, and look at him. It's controllable, and it's controllable very HIV, inexpensively.
Yeah. That is correct, but you would still think that a vaccine would be the best solution. And
be nice.
Yet there is not one. So,
and when there is one, I'm going to be the last guy in the line to get it, because I don't trust anybody up there anymore.
Well, that's a whole other issue, but
yeah.
The fact is, this is not a Democrat versus Republican issue, and that is all you're hearing about on the news, which is crazy to me.
Well, it has a little bit to do with Tulsa, doesn't it?
Well, there's Tulsa, and there's an election year, and there's the convention coming to Jacksonville pretty soon. So there's a combination of factors out there that is leading to those stories, but that. Still, my point is that we're all susceptible to this virus, and as long as we are aware of the risk and keep high-risk people out of risky situations, then we should be able to get through this.
Yep.
So, the market realizes that, and that is why you're seeing the market come back the way it has. It was a really good week. The Dow was the low man on the totem pole, and it only increased by 1%, where the S&P increased by almost 2%, and the NASDAQ was up 3.7%. The NASDAQ is now above its February peak once again, while the other two indexes have not regained those previous highs, and they're also not positive for the year. So we're still lagging on the other two indexes, but the NASDAQ is just on fire. A lot of that has to do with the fact that technology companies are built to withstand this type of pandemic, and a lot of those are listed on the NASDAQ. So it makes sense that it would be leading the way forward. Plus, the technology sector is the hottest thing out there, has been for 5-plus years, and it really doesn't show any signs of slowing down at the moment. Within the S&P, there were some winners and some losers over the week. The biggest loser was utilities, dropping 2%, while healthcare was up over 3%. Then we saw technology, communication services, consumer staples, and materials all have gained more than 2%. So really, a pretty good week as long as you stayed away from utilities.
Yeah, well, I don't, but still. No, I still believe that the best thing you can do for yourself, you know how these things change from week to week, as you hear it right here on the show. The best thing you can do during times of intense volatility and rotation of asset classes and sort, just stay diversified and ride it out. The general broad market is still on a rising pattern. The S&P looks poised right now to continue right past where it is and on to new records. So I'm cautiously optimistic. All right, we got to pay a few bills and take a little break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Now, this one, it's a little off the subject, except for the energy sector being so depressed. So I have to take a phone call, but I want to give this first in case we're going to get a guess on it. In what year did Americans pay the highest average per gallon gasoline price, inflation adjusted? What year saw the highest inflation-adjusted average gasoline price? Good morning, Larry.
Yeah, quick question. I won't burn time.
No problem.
Frontier Communications, to your knowledge, are they declaring Chapter 11?
I have not heard. I kind of lost track of them, eight, 10 years ago
or
something like that.
Yeah, I got a letter from them, and their stockholders are SOL.
Well, I'm not surprised. The reason I lost touch with them is I've kept hearing stories, and I never heard a good one.
Okay, I won't burn any more time. Y'all have a good Father's Day.
No problem whatsoever.
Hey, don't forget, by the way, Grandfather, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, grandfathers, too. Happy Grandfather's Day.
Yeah, he can tell you some stories.
Yeah, I've been a grandfather for a good number of years now.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
It's a good point, too, because grandfathers are really important in that without them, there wouldn't be any fathers.
But Frontier Communications did file Chapter 11 bankruptcy in April. April 14th, looks like.
Were they separately listed on the exchange?
I'm not sure.
Because they were tied in with some Verizon stuff. It was my sister that was involved in that with some negotiations before she moved down here. And I just remember it was a debacle. Just every possible thing you can think of, and it was all negative.
They're trying to restructure. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, it's pretty common now to be doing that. You're casting off some debt and so on. But by the way, anybody, if you ever wake up one morning and the stock symbol you've been following has a Q on the end of it all of a sudden, get out. That means they just declared bankruptcy. Just a little stock trader's gem there. All right, Angela and Howard, we're talking about, with rates so low, how about if we borrow money against our house and then we invest it and pocket the difference? So as I was taking over the room from them, they said, I bet it's a complicated answer. And I told them, well, it's actually a simple answer followed by a complicated answer. Simple answer, no. But that's not the end of the discussion. The complicated answer involves saying the right thing to a whole series of questions that we could ask. Let's start kind of from the top. First off, you're going to take out a mortgage on your house. Is it going to be a mortgage? Is it going to be a HELOC? Will it require a repayment of principal and interest, or can you do an interest only? Now, is that interest going to be deductible to you? Probably not these days, since very few people are itemizing their income taxes anymore. So the cost of the thing, cash flow-wise, is going to be whatever you are required to pay back that month. All right. You've got to keep that in mind. What if your investments don't yield a constant rate of return every month in cash? Well, that cash has to be funded from somewhere else, obviously. How is your own cash flow? Can you handle this? Can you take over the payment on that, even if things are not good in the market? Those are a couple of little things. All right, let's talk about interest rates. There never has been, there is not now, and there never will be a risk-free interest rate return product that will pay you as much as a mortgage. Why? Because all those things I just mentioned define a short-term interest rate. When you are dealing with a mortgage, it is defined as a longer-term interest rate. And except for brief periods of inverted yield curves, which self-correct, you will always pay more than your short-term rates. All right, how are you going to make a profit if you can't use a short-term product? Well, the answer to that is you're going to add risk. Risk and return move together. As one gets bigger, the other one gets bigger. And in order to add enough risk to cover what you're paying in your mortgage rate and make a profit, remembering that the profit you make will be taxable at least at capital gains rate, you've got to have a pretty good spread in there. Now, to make that spread happen means you're going to have to add some risk in your portfolio. Now, when you go into, I'm not talking about the bond market either, because that's, you know, the interest rates are low. I'm talking about the stock market. you want to make money in the stock market, you better have a minimum of 5 years where you can sit on that investment. Because if you look at the pure market risk, the chances of losing money by having to sell out anytime in the first 5 years are far greater than your chances of success. So 5 years is the absolute minimum that we use as a rule of thumb for getting into the market, into the stock market part of it. You got any comments so far, Adam? How am I doing?
No, I generally agree. I'm almost 100% hard no on the answer to this question.
Yeah. Now, what are you using an advisor? And the reason I'm going to ask that is very simple. Over the long haul in investing, it is far more important what you do with your own money than it is what assets you hold in your portfolio. The advisors will all help you select some assets, but do they have control over your emotions and your actions? Well, no, they don't really, but if you're paying them, they're more likely to listen. So I would not get my advice from people around the water cooler, that's for sure. And I would not do it myself unless I were a very successful long-term independent investor, because it has been shown in various studies lately that people who use good qualified fee-only advisors make an extra 2.5% to 3% return annually over time. Now, if you're going to pay somebody 1%, they're going to get you 2.5% or 3%. That's as good a bargain as getting a 4% interest rate on your investment and only paying out 2.5%. Well, since you can't do the second part, you can always do the first part instead. So hire a qualified advisor if you're even thinking about it. The first thing he or she is probably going to do is talk you off the ledge and say, don't do it. But if you have all the other things in place and you understand the answers and you want to do it, you've got to understand exactly what you're getting yourself into. Now, there is a sort of simplistic thing that you might not really think about in here. You know what your interest rate is going to be. What return are you going to target on top of that? Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. I am calling about an experience I had late Friday afternoon in the stock market.
Yeah.
I had been carrying a stock called Gilead, G-I-L-D.
Yep. The ones who are dealing with the virus.
Right, exactly. And so it looked like for the last 10 days or so, it was in some sort of a trade, very tight trading range. It might have even been consolidating a little bit. But what happened is in the last 5 minutes, prior to the final 5 minutes, there was about 6 million shares sold. Then in the last 5 minutes of the trading day, there was an additional 12 million shares sold. And then I was trying to put my sell order in, and instead of and every time I get ready to pull the trigger, the price would jump up. So I was actually chasing the price up just about to where it closed on Friday, around $78, and I got out of it. My question is, one is, do you have any idea or thoughts about what was going on? And two, do you think that there, with that kind of activity, will there be any sort of follow-through on Monday?
Well, we are not notorious for following individual stocks, but this one is in the limelight because of the work they're doing on the virus, both for treatment and hopefully for a vaccine. And whenever you get into the biotechnology arena, you can count on one thing over anything else, that rumors will happen and they will create immense volatility in the stock. So not being an actual follower of Gilead, I have really no comment on it. Do you, Adam?
I mean, I'm just looking at the chart, and you're right. That is an amazing jump right before the close on Friday. But I don't see any news to back that up. I mean, they might be trading on the potential of the FDA approving something for them, but I don't see anything specific that would have caused that type of movement.
You know what word comes to mind to me? Insider trading. No, worse than that. Speculation is perfectly legal. I'm talking about this reeks of insider stuff. And if there's one thing I don't trust, it's insider information. So, no, I honestly don't, but I will be watching it Monday morning because it sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Good, I'll call you next week.
Good deal. Yeah, please do.
Yeah, please. I appreciate the call. We got to run, got to take a little break, and we'll see what happens with it. Now, that's a good question because they have been named prominently in the in all the government talk about getting this stuff done. So I'll be curious to see. You know, one thing you know for sure, somebody's going to make a lot of money and somebody's going to lose a lot of money. I wonder which one will be which. And we won't know till next week. All right, we've got to take a little break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are still having a trivia question out there. That is, in what year did Americans pay the highest inflation-adjusted per-gallon price for gasoline? And it might surprise you, as it did me. I have a couple comments, then we want to get back to Adam. Actually, I'm going to kind of slot things in here. In the question about borrowing money against your home to invest in the market and pocket the difference, you know what you're going to pay when you borrow the money from a HELOC or whatever. Do you know if that is a fixed rate or a variable rate? Right now, we know for a couple of years, because Chairman Powell has said so, that rates aren't going anywhere, so you're safe for a while. But we're talking about a five-year window, and I want to know if you can take a good guess what you'll be paying in the fourth and fifth year. And if so, what kind of a targeted return are you going to have? If you're borrowing at 3, are you trying to make 4 or 5 or 6 or anything like that? And if so, do you know how to do that? Do you have the software to do it? Do you have the knowledge to do it? People like us, we have that ability and the software to do it, but it's a long-term average, and it takes time to realize that goal. In any given year, it might be different than that. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Van Wee?
Excellent. And you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. What's happening?
I've been listening to your show for quite a while, and unfortunately, I've been working some long hours at Amazon, so I've been away for about 2 months.
Wow.
We were putting in some 60-hour weeks there because nobody would come to work because of the COVID virus and things.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was listening intently about the I know it's not a good idea to borrow money from your house and invest it, but I was going to ask about we're in need of another car, and I'm 66 years old, and I have a mortgage that I'll never pay off anyway, and I was wondering if it would be a good idea to refinance my house to get the money for a car that I would have to pay interest on.
Oh, now there, wait a minute, let's challenge that assumption.
Okay.
Do you really need to pay interest on a car loan these days?
Yeah.
There are an awful lot of people out there who are doing the take the money and divide by X number of months, and that's your payment. No interest rate whatsoever.
That assumes a brand new car. And
it does.
Only the models that they have selected for that offer. So I don't think that's necessarily a realistic scenario for most people.
No, but it's something that should be looked at as a step one. What do you think about the refi, Adam? Do you know what your refi cost would be, Ron?
I haven't researched it, but off the top of my head, and this is just a guess, I would say anywhere between $3,000 and $4,000.
What is your current mortgage rate?
My current mortgage is 4.125.
Oh, you're in the ballpark. Yeah. The rule of thumb in the industry says you got to save an entire point on interest rates for a refi to make sense. I'm not sure I absolutely believe that, because 1 point off of a 10-point mortgage is 10%. 1 point off of a 4 is 25%. So, yeah, that's encouraging to me. How much is your house worth?
The house is worth about $425,000.
What do you owe?
I owe about $200,000.
Okay, so you're nowhere near getting into trouble with the loan-to-value ratio. That's a good sign. Gosh, I'm having trouble picking holes in this. How about you?
Well, how far into your current mortgage are you? Are you more than halfway through it?
No, sir, only 5 years.
Oh, okay.
It just got better again.
Yeah, it did. I think it's worth looking into.
Yeah.
I would think that the math probably says that if you ignore the money you take out to pay off the car, or to buy a car with cash, and you just look at the value of the refi, it would probably take you, my guess is, less than 2 years to pay back the extra costs of the refi. So to me, if you're going to stay in that house for the next 10 plus years, it could very well be worth it.
Yeah, not only that, but your monthly payment is going to wind up, I'd bet anything, will wind up less by doing this than it would by taking out the interest-free car loan. So all the pointers are looking good.
Okay, I've actually been working with someone, and they already gave me a tentative quote.
Good.
And I would save around $140 a month.
Wow.
And my new mortgage rate would be 3.375.
That's funny. So that's the exact average rate for this week.
It is,
of
exactly.
30-year mortgages.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And
okay.
And it ticked down to 8 basis points. And you'll be able to get that for a while, is my point. I would pursue this.
Okay.
All things being equal, you answered all the questions correctly.
Okay. I was out walking the dog this morning, and I was thinking in my head, it would take no more than 3 years to pay this off, to make it financially a goal.
Yeah, and if your payment went down that $141, it doesn't mean you have to pay less. You could put that on it, and that would just accelerate the pay down of your principal, too. And you'd be paying the same as you were before. Get rid of all those closing costs and all that. Yeah,
we'd be able to get a second car, because right now my wife and I are a one-car family.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you what, if you do this, would you call us back and let us know how it turned out?
I sure will.
I'd appreciate that. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
You want to take a shot at the trivia question, speaking of cars and gasoline?
You know, I don't know if I qualify to win or not, because I'm looking at the statistics right now.
Well, I don't know how you get the answer. It's only the answer I'm looking for.
Well, can I say what I was going to guess?
Sure.
And then I'll take my real guess if I can
do that.
And you don't have to tell me if I was correct. I was going to say 2012, because I was delivering Chinese food part-time, and I remember paying $4.29 a gallon, and we argued for almost a year to convince the owner that we needed more money for delivery. Like, we were getting $2.50 a delivery.
Wow.
We finally got him to bump it up to $3.
Wow.
So,
but what's your real guess?
My real guess would be 1981 with the inflation adjusted. And again, I'm cheating. I'm looking at a thing that says it was $2.97 a gallon in 1981, and I figure that's got to be the highest with inflation adjusted. So,
well, I'm going to tell you that my source says that that is not correct.
Good, because I felt guilty.
You shouldn't.
I would have felt guilty. I would have probably donated the gift card or something like that if I had one. So,
hey, you can pay it forward by calling us back and letting us know if you get this thing done.
I intend to go through with it. It's going to be a hassle, because they want all kinds of paperwork.
Oh, it is a bear. It is definitely a bear.
The name of your firstborn child,
yeah.
Your mother's middle name.
Yep.
Who was your teacher in first grade?
And they all... Yeah, the only thing I might do is just shop that mortgage to see if you can get another tenth taken off of it.
Okay, that's a good advice.
Never know. Independent brokers or whatever. I know the real estate folks love Christine Kennedy, and our family has used her quite a bit, and you might just give her a quick call, too.
Christine Kennedy?
Yeah, both with K's. Christine with a K and Kennedy with a K, and you can look her up real easily online. She's local.
Okay.
And very good.
Well, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the call.
Okay. Good listening to you again.
Thank
you. Have a good wonderful day, guys.
Well, an Amazon full-timer, full-timer. That's a lot to work for very long, but they got it done. That's an important thing. All right. I'm pretty much done. Adam, you got a little more to wrap up in the market, which you can start here, and after the next break you can finish that up. So take it away.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about, we've been talking a lot, actually, about signs that the economy is coming back, and this week was not an exception to that. there was some really, really good economic data this week. And it, not only was it good, but it blew away expectations. So that to me is even better than just positive reports that are on par with what we thought was going to happen. I want to get into those, but I'll wait until after the break because I hear the music playing. I know that means that we are about out of time for this segment.
All right, I've got a few seconds to fill this in. I looked at the retail sales, and as you probably heard, that the retail came in as a barn burner, but it had dropped. There was a record drop the month before and a record rise in May. Now, they said it came back partway. But what happens is if you take the 1.0 base and deplete it by the fall and add back in the rise, it's actually 104% of what it was 2 months ago. So don't let anybody tell you that it didn't come all the way back. It's just not true. Now, it's not up to last year, but we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we still have the trivia question out there. In what year did Americans pay the highest inflation-adjusted price for gasoline? And we know it's not 1981. Got a couple of quick comments to make before Adam wraps up. And this is germane to the whole borrowing from Peter to pay Paul sort of thing. But first, I want to slip one in. Any of you parents, especially out there, if you were paying college expenses this year and got a refund of some of them, as so many did when they shut down the schools, if you borrowed from your 529 plan to make those payments, you have until 60 days or July 15th, whatever is latest, to replace the funds. So no matter what, you've got at least till July 15th. If you got money back and you would like to put it back in the 529 and get it in the tax-free working zone, you have the ability to do that, but only until July 15th. So you know. All right, next one is a quick note on Left Coast Logic. A lot of you are probably familiar with CalPERS, the California pension system, which is absolutely huge, like $400 billion worth of huge. But they are dramatically underfunded, as all the public pensions are right now, especially after the hit in the market. Right now, the 100 largest public pension systems are only 66% funded. Now, by May, with the market improving a bit, they got back to 71.3% by the end of May. So it's a little better than it was. But CalPERS has a system ready. They're going to implement it, and it's going to change everything. You ready? We're going to borrow 20% more money and invest it, because there's two ways you can make money: more assets and better performance. In order to even come to break-even point, they have established a 7% return assumption. Now, with interest rates at, well, let's just round it off to zero, how are you going to make a 7% return? You're not going to do it by de-risking, that's for sure. Therefore, we're going to up the risk. Now, here's an even better part. In order to become fully funded, they have to have an annual return of 10%, which is, difficult these days, I would say. So if you want to know how to get out of trouble financially, the answer, according to Left Coast Logic, is borrow more money. You learned it here first. Carry on, Adam.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking a little bit about numbers that beat their forecast this month, and you mentioned the retail sales. That was a big one. The May report showed the strongest growth ever recorded on that report. The forecast was for an 8.4% growth rate, and instead they saw 17.7% growth. So the experts were off by more than 100%. That hurts. But then, of course, you also have to keep in mind that April was on record with a decline at 16.4%, and that was the biggest downside ever.
That was adjusted up just a little bit, Adam. 14.6.
Yep, I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
And other, yeah, it was revised to negative 14.7. So that was brought up. The actual report came in a lot stronger, and so it was a pretty fantastic report. The largest increases came in clothing, which was up 188%.
Particularly pants, which no one had been wearing.
Yeah. The strongest ever on record. In fact, many of the categories had the strongest ever ever recorded increases on record. So furniture was up 89%, sporting goods up 88%, and the list goes on. Everything showed positive. Health and personal care was the smallest at a 0.39%, but it was still an increase. So the top about 10 categories were the strongest increases ever seen in the report. So just a really, really positive report. And then also people continue to buy houses, as we were talking about earlier. The Mortgage Bankers Association seasonally adjusted purchase index rose another 3.46% this week. It's the ninth increase in a row, and that's the longest streak on record. And we're also seeing some gains in home builder sentiment, although it's still pretty muted. It's off its lows, which is a good start. The other two positive reports I saw were the New York Fed manufacturing number, which was forecast to drop almost 30 points and instead came in flat. So it was off by about 30 points. And then we had the Philly Fed with a similar result. It rose from negative 43.1% in May to 27.5 in June. So it was a 70-point swing, and it is, needless to say, the largest gain on record.
Yeah, by a lot. Yeah, several standard deviations worth, I would say.
So, yeah, for sure.
That's all pretty bullish, and it reminds me when we were talking about the shutdown of the country 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, whatever it was, and we were discussing the kinds of industries that lose sales. And some of them, like restaurants, a lost sale is a lost sale. You know, I'm not going to go out for a pizza next week instead of this week because next week is an independent occurrence. So other things, like apparel, those sales are pushed later into the year, which is why we said so many times, contrary to the word on the street, that a lot of this stuff was going to come back and show up in massive improvements later in the year. Now, people don't necessarily sit back and think about those things if their main job is to make Trump look bad from a journalistic standpoint. But since that's not our goal here, we'd like to point these things out. Now, Apple stores are open, and they're closing a few of them in a cautionary move, including some in Florida. Ours will remain open, so geeks of Northeast Florida, breathe a sigh of relief. Your Apple store is staying open.
Oh, man, I'm so happy about that. But, yeah, that was one of the reasons for the market drop on Friday. Now, I think that the talking heads always try and come up with a reason for market drops, and it's pretty arbitrary what they assign them to. Sure, that's not great news, but it also doesn't have any – I mean, it's not going to have a material impact on Apple's results for the quarter. So I don't think that is the reason for stocks trading down, although that is a little bit of a reason for some pessimism, if anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, tonight – the media's got its usual wads where things shouldn't be. Just hang on a second. Good morning, Leroy.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. I thought I'd give a quick guess here before you go off the air. 1978.
I love your thinking. That is the.
But I'm wrong.
Yes.
That is I knew you were going to say that.
That's the exact reason that I asked this question today, is I wanted somebody to say that. And I can't think of a better guy to do it.
Okay.
Thanks.
All righty.
Have
hey,
a good
I'll
one.
Continue listening, and I'll hear the answer in a minute.
Thanks. Happy Father's Day.
All right. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. The media's all wadded up, of course, because the Trump campaign is going to make people sign a COVID waiver acknowledgement thing to get in there tonight so that they can exercise their own free will. Well, don't be surprised if you're out looking for a job or even to go back to a job you used to have and you get something called an employee COVID-19 acknowledgement form. And it says things such as, you will take your temperature every day immediately before reporting to work. If it's 100.4 or higher, you will not return to work until 14 days later. On, let's see, if you have within the last month traveled any country or area that's subject to it, you will not be allowed to go to work. If you have cough, shortness of breath, loss of smell or taste, fatigue, muscle aches, chills, shaking, or persistent headaches, you will maintain social distancing. You will wear a face mask. You will thoroughly wash your hands for 20 seconds. You will sanitize your work area several times, thoroughly cleanse any common areas. In the event you're unable to satisfy any of those, you'll immediately exit the workplace and promptly inform human resources of the situation. If you observe any workplace conditions that could be conducive, you will immediately report them. So let's not just make this a political thing. That is one of the most common sense documents I have ever in my life read, because, hey, we're all in it together, as they like to say. All right, Ron, you sitting down? The correct answer, according to our sources, which are the best researchers that money can buy, from what we can find, and we trust them on all things financial, the correct answer was indeed 2012, when you were paying $4.29 and delivering the Chinese food. So that's why I made sure that you come up with the other answer. Otherwise, we'd have gotten it blown out of the water just like that. Folks, I can't tell you how much fun this show has been. Everybody's in a good mood, and we're going to watch the rally tonight and just hope that everything goes off without a hitch. There's a lot of weirdos out there. They better be careful. See you next week at the same time. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.